March 29th, 2025. Welcome to This Week in Waukesha, the podcast series, the new podcast series. I am your host, Downtown Donnie Brown, coming to you from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown here in our beloved Banting Park home. I am joined by the extraordinary young producer, the mighty Max Martinson, at our WAUK studios in Radio Park on Victory Drive. And we have another guest that's running for elected office. This is Stephanie Fidlin, a candidate for our School District of Waukesha board. Stephanie, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. So glad you can join us. And as Stephanie knows, it was a rather interesting week with the Freeman article relating to my podcast and another school board candidate, Sam D'Amico, and his educational status. And while we're glad we're having a lot of listeners, it's unfortunate that it's really, there's been too deep of a dive in such a very pedantic issue. And of course, I accept my responsibility for the mistakes I made in contributing to that. But this is about Stephanie. But Stephanie, because you share you're running kind of on the same platform with Sam and with Angelique Byrne, wanted to give you an opportunity to just kind of speak out on all the big spotlight surrounding Sam's status as a student or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think like I mentioned in the Freeman, you know, he's met all the legal requirements to appear on the ballot. He's completed classes. He's waiting to walk in June for commencement. And again, I just think, he's an incredibly ambitious young person who's stepped up to take on a big challenge like this and represent students on the board. And so, yeah, I think he has a unique voice. So,
sounds great. And I like that emphasis on unique voice. And I thought that's what I found intriguing about his candidacy and what he brings to the table. But again, this is now about you. Stephanie, for our viewers, is a registered nurse and a certified emergency nurse. She has three children in the Waukesha School District. Slow down, Don. And has been active in her PTO for the last 9 years and is a former co-president, which I think is also a unique body of experience, given that I don't know if as many parents are involved in the parent-teacher organizations at their respective children's schools. But so, Stephanie, why... tell us why you want to, what is your why? Why do you want to run, as your website says?
Yeah. So, I mean, like you mentioned, you know, I've been involved in PTO work since my oldest started 4K. And so that's been a lot of, you know, fundraising and volunteering. And then as I, you know, had gotten more into it, I eventually ended up leading as co-president. And that's really, you know, organizing a lot of events and things, which is really to get families engaged with the students. And the teachers and in school and things like that, which I think is what we need more of, really, is that parental engagement piece. But then not a huge piece of PTO is fundraising. And so that's, you know, working to identify needs of things that are in the school that there may not be a budget for and how we can, you know, raise funds for that. One of the projects that I'm the most proud of at Summit View, the playground equipment was coming up on end of life. And so it took 3 years. And a lot of fundraising and a lot of events and a lot of organizing with the community, like restaurant give back nights and silent auctions, soliciting donations for that to put together events. But, you know, we fundraised over $100,000 to build a new playground for Summit View. Wow. And I'm very proud to have my family's name on the plaque there.
You raised over $100,000 for that playground? Is that what you said?
You know, as part of the PTO, like as part of, you know, and I was co-president for 2 years, but it was
many the organization families. Raised $100,000. I apologize.
The organization raised over $100,000.
That's incredible.
Yep.
So, congrats.
Yep. And, you know, we received grants, worked with community partnerships and businesses and things like that to, you know, to close all the gaps. But it was a lot of just grassroots fundraising. It was a lot of families donating and things like that, whether it was events that we were organizing or restaurant give back nights where we, you know, throw it out to the whole community to come in and stuff. It was just a lot of organizing. And again, I was part of a team and I helped lead part of that team. And it took many years and many hands, but we did get that playground built. And every time my kids play on it, I'm just so proud to see, you know, just all the kids just enjoying that. And a large part of that playground, I will mention, was that it was built to make sure that it was inclusive for all students. because students in wheelchairs typically had to stay on the blacktop. And so, yep. Mm-hmm. And so this playground was built with the thought in mind, it's 360. So there's ramps and pieces so that even kids of all abilities can interact with all the features of the playground. And that's really important.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned playgrounds, and we won't stay on this too long, but when I was on the council, I was concerned about the playgrounds in our neighborhood that the Banting and Horning schools share. And I was very active in our parks because we have quite a few parks in our district, which we're proud of. And the city, as I understood it, the parks had reached out to the school leadership, not necessarily the board, but about partnerships where the parks department would flip the bill for renovating, updating that playground space. And as I understood that there was no response or maybe even a rejection from the school leadership. Is that something that you as a candidate would be willing to address if you're elected to the school board?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the more partnerships we can build, the better. So I think that is something that we could look at, but I think that, if the city's already maintaining parks, maybe they would have, you know, there could be like opportunities to build partnerships to, you know, whether it's replacing equipment or ideas about maintaining equipment. It would be something that we could explore for sure. So.
Fantastic. Thanks. And then going back to the platform as promoted in your campaign literature that's been distributed through direct mail, one of these key issues is demanding transparency in tax dollar use, long-term planning, and preventing school closures. Could you speak to that, please?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, again, it's just the more that we can bring the community into this stuff, I mean, bring the key stakeholders in and, you know, just make things more transparent, that's always for the best. You know, we need the community to be aware of the challenges that schools are facing right now in terms of funding. You know, we've talked a lot in this campaign about the need for fair funding for special education and reimbursement. You know, public schools are getting 30% reimbursement for special education, and private schools are getting 90%, and that's taxpayer dollars.
Wow.
And so, you know, the fight is on for fair funding. And in Madison, that looks like getting public schools to 60%. But for Waukesha schools, that's $10 million. So that could close a gap for us in the budget, because we do have some budget challenges ahead, and they are going to have to look at, the buzzword right now is right sizing the school. But calling it what it is, it's addressing declining enrollment and closing schools. You know, and then the Department of Education closing for the school district of Waukesha, that's an $8 million plus budget gap that's coming if those federal funds are held up. So the school district of Waukesha, that's $8 million. That's 56 or 59, I believe, full-time, positions that will need to be cut. And that's important. So as we start to look at that stuff, we need long-range plans, and those long-range plans mean informing the community and bringing the community in so they have the awareness of that, so that we have time to get feedback of, okay, if we did need to close a school, what would the impact on this community be? Because, you know, when they made the decision to close Whittier, that decision was made from a financial standpoint, and the community was informed at the last minute. And, you know, and so then you didn't get a chance to get that feedback of what would the actual impacts of this be. I know that for Hadfield, you know, the parking, there's not enough parking for the merge of the schools. So the neighborhood around it is inundated. You know, those taxpayers have this huge, you know, impact every day at drop off and pickup of, you know, all these cars in the streets and everything. So, you know, those are some of the things that I think that it's important to bring people in early on that. When we talk about transparency, we talk about making the community aware, getting that feedback, you know, conducting those surveys that they used to do and things like that, so that we can know, you know, what do the people want, and you can, you know, operate from that accountability standpoint.
Interesting. Another platform is expand elective offerings to meet future job needs, particularly in STEM careers. And it seems, I would think that that's a unanimous front from all sides that they want to promote STEM education and related careers. And I certainly applaud that. But what about all the other educational offer? I guess some people call them the soft, but history is very important to me. English, effective writing and communication, arts, all those. how do we balance that and kind of keep those other programs on the forefront, or at least make a case for them being relevant?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the most concrete example I can give is this. I have a fifth grader. He's at Summit View, and Summit View fifth grade has a long, great tradition of doing the wax museum. The fifth grader chooses a person that they want to be their project for the Living Wax Museum. And it can be a celebrity, it can be a historical figure, it has to be a real person. And they do a project where they study that person, they write a paper about, you know, the biography of their life. And they have to memorize a short little piece. And then they, you know, dress in costumes, they help design their own costume of what they're going to wear. And then the families and grandparents come in and, you know, press the button, and then they give their little speech, you know, of the person's life. And it's a living wax museum. It's a wonderful project. It incorporates so many different elements, their writing, their public speaking, the creativity of the costume and the design and all these things. But as the district moved to this lockstep curriculum, and they've, you know, said, we have this science backed, you know, lockstep curriculum. Now all fifth grade classes across the district have to be doing the same thing at the same time. So some of you is not holding the wax museum this year. And I've got one kid who has learned every fact possible about Michael J. Fox, who is bummed. And it's so hard because
a great, you know, Canadian, by the way.
Yes. He saw his sister do this project. You know, and again, it's a great project. And it, you know, he declared who he wanted to be in fourth grade and was like, don't take my person. But again, I think that really just speaks to it sounds good on paper, this idea of lockstep curriculum. But taking away that autonomy, what are you losing? And so this was, you lost a great opportunity for a really great project that would have engaged, you know, the students in, again, multifaceted learning. You're talking about writing, reading, public speaking, just all these different things. They created a poster board that had to go along with it that you could read, you know, when you went to the museum. And so, you know, I think that you need to explore those kinds of things. And those are situations where if we were asking those questions of like, what would be the impact, we would see all the great opportunities that we're going to lose. So,
Terrific. Thank you.
So when you talk about, you know, bringing more opportunities in the way of STEM and stuff like that, I think that, you know, we have the STEM middle school and this, you know, opportunity in the STEM elementary. You know, where can we be expanding those opportunities, whether it's creating more things like that or developing other things, you know, in addition to that? Because I think that ultimately we want to be giving more opportunities, not taking things away.
Right. Okay. Thank you. A lot of discussion, or this is a big platform item, is fostering parental engagement and feedback to strengthen the partnership between schools and families. Give us your take on that.
Yeah, so the other side talks a lot about parental rights. And, you know, they you know, the parents, you know, we have to have parental rights and all that stuff. Parents have always had rights, and parents still have rights. I think what's far more important is the parental engagement. And I think I see a lot of that through my work with PTO. But even as, you know, I worked to help develop the district-wide parent-teacher coalition. And so that's all the PTOs and all the PTAs of the 13 elementary schools. And so we bring parents in and we start saying, how can we make the schools better? What can we do? What's the need? You know, what are teachers saying they need? What supports do they need to be able to do the job better? Or there's resources, it's a gap, like where we can either fundraise for these things or leverage community partnerships to get these things done. And so I think that that's the parental engagement piece that's far more important than parental rights. Because if you just look at education as, you know, 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. and that's it, that's not, you know, school has to, there has to be the parental engagement piece on the back end. You know, when kids are coming home, is someone reading with them in the evening? Are they getting extra help if they have, you know, needs with math and things like that? And if it's not happening with families, you know, are they getting plugged into tutoring or things like that? So, I mean, that's the parental engagement piece.
Sure.
It doesn't really help to just say like, well, I'm a parent and I have rights. Well, of course you do. Like, you know, and nobody's questioning that. The question is whether or not you're engaging in it. So.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. And you raise a good point about this parental rights thing. It seems to speak to a fear that parents have that what's being taught or what's being promoted by teachers or is contrary to their religious or political beliefs. And, you know, how do we address that effectively so parents can feel at ease or have some sort of, I don't want to say compromise, but just a notion that your kids won't be proselytized by what's being shared in the classroom and what's being, you know, promoted by the teachers.
I think if, you know, parents have concerns, I think one of the best things that they could do is volunteer. You know, every classroom has needs, whether it's, you know, stapling things or reading, you know, one-on-one, like reading buddies I did in second grade. Every classroom has a need for a volunteer. So if you have real concerns about what's happening, you know, you should reach out to the teacher and get involved, because I think that you'll see, you'll see that teachers, you know, they're doing the very best they can. They're there teaching to kids, you know, many levels, whether the kid needs help and they're struggling and they're trying to, you know, get them on track. And then the kids that are already on track and excelling, and they're trying to keep them engaged so they can go deeper and not slow down their learning. I've never in the time that I've volunteered in the schools seen, you know, this idea that teachers are promoting ideology. I see teachers working their tails off, you know, trying to manage 20 some wild little personalities and keep everybody on task, and they do an amazing job. So.
That's true. You know, and that's another issue is there have been, you know, teachers that vacated the Waukesha School District, either retired early or resigned because of some of the pressure they'd gotten, I think, from the board and the teachers. And, you know, how do we address attracting good teachers back to Waukesha schools, assuming that's still an issue or a challenge?
I mean, I think if you think about any workplace, you know, that you've worked before, you want to be...
We're good. 3 minutes. We're good.
Okay. Okay. You know, any workplace that you've worked at before, you know, you want a place where you feel valued, you feel heard, you feel respected, and you have the equipment that you need to do your job. That's what I think about as a nurse. If I've left a hospital, it's because I didn't feel valued, I didn't feel heard, or I didn't have the equipment that I needed to do my job. So I think if we can address those things, and as a board member, I would be wanting to get that direct feedback from the teachers.
Sure.
Whether it was through surveys, or just going and interacting and just seeing what are the resources that you need, what are the gaps, and how can we be supporting you better so that you can do the job that you do so well to the best of your ability. So
that sounds great. And speaking of feedback, Stephanie, I know you're spending the rest of the day, the last Saturday before the election this Tuesday, hitting the bricks, canvassing, going door to door. And what is the, and I know you've done that throughout your campaign, what has been some of the feedback from Waukesha voters, from residents about concerns they have with our schools or ideas or recommendations?
I think a lot of people are concerned with the stuff coming down nationally with the push to close the Department of Education. They are concerned about what the impact will be on the local public schools. But we do hear all the time older people saying, I'm retired. I don't have kids in the schools anymore. It's, you know, I don't worry about the school board. And I think that the biggest message that we've tried to spread is that local schools matter. Even if you don't have kids in the schools, even if you're retired, the quality of the schools and how they're doing, it matters tremendously for our community. It matters directly for the students that are graduating from these schools that are going to be members of our community, whether they're able to get good paying jobs, whether they're able to be productive citizens. But it also matters for your home values. You know, you want your property value to be strong because people would want to move to Waukesha for the schools. And so I think that that's the most important message that we can impress upon people, is that whether you have kids in the district or not, you definitely need to be paying attention Sounds to the good. Local school boards and voting for people that are supporting public schools.
Sounds great. Final question, Stephanie, what is it you'd like listeners to know about Stephanie Fidlin and your candidacy that we haven't covered in this podcast?
You know, I have been advocating for our schools, you know, as a member of the PTO and doing things in the district and volunteering. And whether or not I'm elected to the board, that work is going to continue. And I will continue speaking up for our students, fighting for our schools, volunteering, fundraising, doing the work to meet the need and make sure that every kid has a great opportunity for a quality public education. So for me, that's not going to stop. So
sounds great. Stephanie Fidlin, candidate for Waukesha School District. Thank you so much for spending this Saturday morning with us, longer than you expected. Thanks for your patience and indulgence. I want to thank the mighty Max Martinson for doing a great job and fixing some of these technical hiccups we had. Stick around for podcast number 2. Stephanie, good luck with the rest of your campaign, especially with today's canvassing, and I'm sure tomorrow's and Monday's. And to all our listeners, be sure to vote on Tuesday. If you don't, you are a fool on April Fool's Day if you don't get out and make your voice heard if you haven't voted already. Please remember also that safety is everyone's responsibility. So are good public schools. So is and good mental health is everybody's right. Go Ramila Mahagav, go Lair, and see ya!